I'll call the meeting to order so we can move right into the open public input, our agenda item two. I've also been asked to remind everyone, all of you who want to testify on various topics today, we need you to sign up in one of these public testimony forms for each item so that we can keep track of who wants to testify after each briefing. So it sounds redundant, sounds like a lot of work, but we do need you to sign up for each and every item on a separate sheet so I can keep track. And also, for those of you who haven't testified before the commission, we have a rule that we allow that each individual 3 minutes to testify. We have a timer. And when you hear the beeping noise, that means your time is up. 3 minutes is up. And so we'd like you to conclude your remarks at that point. If you haven't heard the beeper or continue talking for some reason, I'll politely interrupt you and let you know we need to move on to the next citizen. So thanks very much for your cooperation on that. And I'll call you up to the front table. You don't need to talk real close to the mic, just a little bit back, and just give us your views. First person up is Matt Gutzweiler. I think we've met.
Yes.
Sitter.
Yes.
Okay.
Please.
I'm one of those that sign two things on one sheet. I hope it's okay. I wanted to first thank you folks because the commitment that you've made to the fish, wildlife, and the people of Washington State is incredible. The time that you put in, it is appreciated. So I've got a little bit of a problem with horn hunters. Out in the Clackam area, we've got a tremendous amount of ATVs and people driving around right now looking for horns, chasing deer, elk. Last weekend, I went up in the Clackam and I counted 38 vehicles parked beside the road with multiple vehicle trailers behind them that were up there. And there's a new thing going on that I don't know if you're aware of. They're called horn catchers. And they're going out and they're putting these out in the woods. They're putting grain and feed and alfalfa and stuff in them, and then they're putting bungee cords around them. And when the deer and the elk come in, they get their horns all tangled up and it pulls them off. So besides chasing the animals to get their horns, get them to drop off, they're doing this. Two other areas that I went into last week just to check, there was 18 in one and 21 in another vehicles parked with trailers behind them. So it's a problem. There's a lot of people up there. So I've just another reason to start closing some roads, if it's okay. Can I talk on the other one?
Sure.
Okay, pheasant releases. I've been doing pheasant releases as a volunteer for the game department for 17 years. There's a little bit of a flaw, I think, in it. We release for the young people, the youth hunters, on one weekend. They get the weekend to hunt, and then depending on the year, they have 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or 4 weeks until the regular season opens. It would be a really good thing if we could just leave that open for the kids to hunt until the general season opens, because those pheasants are just getting wasted. The coyotes are getting them. 2 weeks is just, or 2 days is not enough. So if we could just leave that open, I think the kids would get a lot more bang for their buck. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
That's all. Thank you.
Tom Fritsch. Is Tom Fritsch there? Oh, thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Director, and Commissioners. I'm here to petition a rule change in the future for hunting turkeys with dogs, fall turkeys only. I have an issue with one of the statements from the public input testimony. The agency response was basically, it's on page 21, it seems Western turkey hunters view turkey hunting a little differently than the Eastern states. When they brought this issue up in the past, most of the comments from turkey hunters have been not supportive. This map will show you that there's 44 states that allow fall turkey hunting. 29 of them allow dogs. The Washington State is the only one in the western edge that doesn't allow fall hunting. We hunt everything from doves to geese, forest grouse, with our dogs. The dog fletches the birds. You call the birds back in, take your shot. The dog prevents any loss of crippled birds. I'd like to see this put in just for the fall season. I don't believe dogs should be in the turkey woods in the spring because of the nesting birds. And also when we're grouse hunting, this turkey seasons run concurrently with grouse seasons. And if I flush a bunch of turkeys, do I take my dog back to my car and go back and hope the turkeys are still there? I don't want to harvest a bird and have a chance of being caught with my dog with me and have a turkey in my possession.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Tom, for your testimony. Could you clarify a little bit more about the actual process of dog hunting with turkeys?
Certainly. I'd be glad to. You go out in the fall at a normal hour instead of dark 30 in the morning as you do in the spring turkey hunts. You can go out at 10 in the morning. You take your dogs out, and they're scenting, and they find birds. The dog rushes. This is a well-trained turkey dog, rushes the birds, and they scatter in every direction. You break up the flock, okay? The dog's barking at the breakup site, so you go up, set up with your camouflage and your dog in your lap and call birds back in. After about a half hour, 45 minutes, if you've broken the flock up completely every direction, you can. They'll start getting want to get back together because in the fall they're in big flocks. So you call them in, and then when you get a bird in range, you take the shot. The dog will immediately go to the bird. If it's wounded, it'll catch it. If not, it's on it, and that prevents losing cripples. And the other aspect, I'm kind of sorry. Is that explain it enough for you there? Or?
I was wondering if what about when you disperse these birds? I know that process, but I was wondering if it didn't cause them to tree.
It might.
And then is that a likely process or an unlikely process?
A hunter, you can shoot them on the flesh, you know, if that's how you want to hunt. But the true fall turkey hunters, this has been going on since 1800s back east. And the true turkey hunter will call them back in. That's the fun of turkey hunting, is to call the birds in and take your shot at 20 or 25 yards. They may tree, but they'll want to get back in a flock, and you start sounding like a lost young bird or a mother hen. And most of the birds that are harvested are young birds. Dogs won't bother turkeys being out there. They won't catch the birds unless they're wounded or sick or something. If they did, the coyotes would have all our turkeys. So we don't have to worry about the dogs catching the turkeys. They're just too fast and too smart for that.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mike Harris.
Mike Harris, citizen from Moses Lake. Thanks for being here in Moses Lake, and thanks for giving me a chance to talk to you. My subject's about the wolf situation in Washington State, and I guess I'm here to plead with you in a sense and give you some quick statistics of what I'm seeing in nearly 20 years of hunting in the state of Montana in the Bitterroot Valley. And these statistics come from Craig Giordonius, who's a biologist in the Bitterroot Valley, and also from publications in Montana Outdoors. In the late 80s and 90s, the cow-calf ratios in the Bitterroot Valley were about 50 per 100. 2010 to present, they're roughly 10 per 100. The West Fork of the Bitterroot, which is on the west side of the valley, in 2005, the herd size was roughly 2,000 head. Presently, it's less than 700. In their studies, they're finding that 50% of the cows are not bred, and even in areas where they have adequate bull-to-cow ratios. In Unit 250, which is the West Fork across the valley, it's now a draw-only unit as of 2011. That unit was general hunting, basically clear back in the history of Montana. Across the valley in Unit 270, where I hunt, in the backcountry of the Anaconda-Pintler Wilderness, has gone to draw-only this year. In 10 years, from the first time that I encountered wolves in this area, it's been 10 years ago when I first saw them. They now are allowing regulated hunting. So in that time period, this is what's happening to the populations. There's a lot of studies being done. It's a very passionate subject. Most everybody blames it on wolves. The Department of Wildlife in Montana doesn't necessarily say that, but the numbers speak for themselves. So I guess, you know, less elk equals less opportunity. Less opportunity means less license sales and less revenue for the department. So I guess what I'm here to do, I'm asking you to be aggressive with your wolf management program. Have it in place, ready to go as soon as the wolf, the breeding pairs are at the minimum level that's required by law. Allow them to be controlled, because the situation in Montana and Idaho is out of control. I have a small world that I'm in. The Bitterroot Valley is a small area, and there's a lot of other areas that are having even bigger problems. But this is what I'm seeing as a citizen and a hunter. And the $1,000 tags that I buy in Montana are getting that's a big pill to swallow. I hunt Montana because of the opportunity. I hunt Montana a lot more than Washington State because of the opportunity of the outdoors and the abundance of game, but it's coming to an end. And I'm afraid, in my opinion, this is going to become probably the worst wildlife management screw-up in modern history. And I just hope that you are conversing with the neighboring states and understand what's really going on, because I don't believe Washington State can take the kind of pressure that we're getting in Montana and Idaho. They have a lot more backcountry, have healthier herds, better situations of high country and wintering range. I just can't see that Washington State is going to be able to take that kind of pressure.
Thank you.
There's an old saying that I like to go by, that if you feel passionate about something, go find someone that disagrees with you. And I try to follow that, but I can't find anybody. But the gentleman from OMAC had somebody that had a positive experience with wolves. I'd like to talk to that person.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. You. Jerry Hickman.
There was some concern about where we would speak, and so I'm basically here to answer questions for the Columbia Plateau Wildlife Management Association, if anything comes up about that. But I do want to make a quick statement about wild turkey hunting in the fall. The population of wild turkeys has really increased in eastern Washington, thanks to the department and to the National Wild Turkey Federation. And I read someplace that one of the questions on the internet questionnaire that the department had out was how to increase participation by more hunters for the fall turkey season. So I sent a few ideas in over the internet. You know, with our effort, if the effort is to try to increase participation of hunters in the fall season, we have problems, of course, with gas prices and other competing hunting opportunities in the fall of the year. But I think one of the best ways to get more turkeys harvested and more people to participate in hunting for them would be to have the turkey season open during some of the archery seasons in September. And the people would be there, be able to take advantage of a flock of turkeys if one shows up while they're hunting big game. I think especially for young hunters, for the youth hunters, some more opportunities in fall seasons would be appropriate, and probably I really appreciate the fact that the commission and the department is offering that free turkey tag for youth hunters. That's a great way to get people started, and so those are just a few of the ideas. I think there's, you know, you can play around with the cost of the tag. That will also help in getting more people to participate. But perhaps just a little more, a few more days of hunting by having the turkey season open with some of the archery seasons. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike Estes.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, I'm the current chair of the Master Hunter Advisory Group. I just thought I'd take the opportunity this morning to let you know, if you're not aware, that this year is the 20th anniversary of the Master Hunter program in the state of Washington. Started in 1992 as the Advanced Hunter Education Program, and that was before it was the Department of Fish and Wildlife. It was the Department of Wildlife at that time. The original brochure, which I have here, stated the goals of the program, and it says, the goals of the program are simple and straightforward, including improving landowner-sportsman's relations, increasing hunter knowledge, and expanding hunting opportunities and or hunter access to private lands. I think you've probably received a lot of correspondence recently from Master Hunters. I assume that you'll meet some of them before the day is over. So I just thought I'd take this opportunity to mention the anniversary of the program. This flyer in 1992 said there were approximately 275,000 hunters in the state. Currently, there are just under 2,000 Master Hunters, 1975, as of the end of the year. Nominally, that would be 1%. These applicants pay a fee. They go through an independent study program. They take an exam, have to demonstrate marksmanship, provide volunteer service, and go through court training. This is an observation training program sponsored by Eyes in the Woods, and go through a background check. So it's not an elitist program. Anyone who has a clean criminal record in the sense of no wildlife violations can apply, and we encourage people to do that. Currently, the Master Hunter Advisory Group is working with Director Anderson and his staff to increase meaningful volunteer opportunities for Master Hunters and others to enhance the value of the program to the department. Each of these people has to donate a minimum of 8 hours per year, 20 hours to certify, 40 hours to recertify. They're required to recertify every 5 years. So I guess what I'd like to do, I believe Commissioner Perry attended one of our meetings a few years ago. I invite any of you to attend. Obviously, they're open to the public. The program is open to everyone, like I say, as long as they're willing to abide by the law and hopefully display good ethics while they're in the field. And obviously, you guys are familiar with the department's website, but the Master Hunter Permit Program has, I believe, one of the foremost web pages in the nation. And anything relating to, obviously, policies and procedures, to our motto, to volunteer opportunities, whatever, there.
Before you say anything, Commissioner Smith, I wanted to thank you for your service.
I thank you for yours.
You're just one of our model citizens helping conservation, so thank you for that.
Thank you.
Commissioner Smith?
You took the words out of my mouth, but thank you for your dedication and commitment and your leadership to a program that is outstanding. And I would welcome the opportunity, at least in the northwest part of the state, if you could let me know when a meeting is there to attend in a regional basis.
Okay. Currently, all of our meetings are in Ellensburg, centrally located. You know how that goes if you've attended department meetings. We have people that obviously come from Blaine to Vancouver to Spokane, Kettle Falls, wherever, but it's the most centrally located location.
Thank you.
Great. Commissioner Perry.
Thank you. Thank you. I too want to thank you for your service. I have been to a couple of Master Hunter meetings, and it's impressive the enthusiasm and the dedication of that group and willing to volunteer service. I did want to ask a question on the brochure you mentioned with the goals that you mentioned in the first part of your talk. Is it possible that we could get a copy of that? Because it looks to me like it varies a little bit from the current Master Hunter policy that the commission passed here several years ago.
Correct. This was the original Advanced Hunter Education Program. There were three steps at that time, and I apologize for taking the extra time, but just to explain quickly, there were three levels to which a person could qualify. One was sharpshooter, one was conservationist, and the top of those was Master Hunter. And what we've done now is revised that and included all of those requirements into the Master Hunter category. When Jerry Gutzweiler was chair in 2008, the program was revamped because of concerns about the ethics of some of the people in the program. We had no background checks. We had no way, and I don't, maybe not a good word, but to cull those that were not as dedicated to giving back and the heritage of hunting and stewards of the hunt and the types of things that we promote now. So I think the program has improved a lot. Obviously, there's still going to be incidents, but we work very closely. We're assigned to the enforcement program, so Chief Bjork and his staff track for us very well. Master Hunter designation is now shown on our hunting licenses. And if we encounter an enforcement person in a situation where anything is questionable, that's brought to the front very quickly. And so very low tolerance for violations. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Jeff Hershey.
I actually wanted to address something on the agenda later this morning, but due to my work obligations, I'm not available to stay late enough. But that item is, don't remember if I mentioned agenda item 4, the seasons and the bag limits, or the hunting seasons and, yeah, the bag limits. I just wanted to kind of kick off the debate about the difference between field possession and home possession in terms of numbers of harvested game. And to kind of frame the context for where the Falconers Association is coming with this, our weapon of choice can't be put in a closet and ignored. We have to feed it year-round. And a practical way to go about that is to save some of the game that we hunt, that we capture during the hunting season, put it in the freezer and feed it during the summer when our birds are no longer hunting. But we can't do that without running afoul of the actual limitations in the possession limit. And I spoke to Dave Ware in the hall about this, and apparently there's some other user groups that may be interested. This probably isn't the time to actually debate this to full, but I wanted to kick the idea out and later on bring it up and get the debate going. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Tony Burnson.
Good morning. This is a proposal to move the youth waterfowl season to the end of the general hunting season after the season closes. The birds are more plentiful, so the youth can have better opportunities for harvest. Ducks in particular are easier to identify because they're all mature, fully feathered. You don't run, pardon the pun, afoul of the law by shooting too many hens of a certain species. Also, you would have less interaction, say on public waters, on the potholes or Moses Lake, in September when the weather usually is quite warm, we have lots of recreational anglers as well as boaters, and oft times there's interaction during that last weekend in September. I would propose that to expand the youth opportunities, we keep the upland hunt in September and provide the youth of the state with would be actually double the number of days in the field. Perhaps it would increase the number of people that were interested to buy licenses. I think that's about in the nutshell.
Interesting idea. Thanks.
Oh, I'd like to say that California implemented this. I have some friends from California, and California implemented this a number of years ago, and it's a huge success. They find that there's more landowners are more willing, since there's so much leased land, owned land, that more people are opening their doors after the season. when there's no conflict with leased land and that type of thing, and really expands the opportunity.
Commissioner Smith?
That is an interesting idea. Do you know the rationale why it was front-loaded historically?
I have no idea what the basis of why it was set up for the – it's used generally the last weekend in September, if I'm not mistaken. And I don't have any historical data on why it was set up in September. But with it being in February, right in September, the kids are just – we're just shooting local birds. They're not plentiful. Very few are feathered up where they can be easily identified. And typically from the people that I know that take people out, I mean, some limit, but just – having more opportunity, and the birds are so plentiful when the season ends. And I think you'd also, although you'd also eliminate the conflict in September when everyone's starting school. It seems to me, I may be wrong, I have kids in school now, but in February there's not much going on. And you also wouldn't have, you would maybe open up the opportunities for the young people that also like to muzzle load or archery hunt in September, and they're forced to make a decision, well, do I do this or do this, where it's going to expand the opportunity.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bob Cook.
I'd like to say thanks to all the commission members for their service. Let's see, our topic on this one, this is number two. Okay. Yellow signs for written permission only. This program is a sham. I find signs out in the field that haven't had a name or number on them in a decade. The program just doesn't work. We need to find something else. As far as I can see, it's a program for guides and paid hunting, which limits public access. Even the ones that have a name and number on them, you never hear from, unless you just happen to know them and record that, then they'll call you back. But, you know, far and away, it's a lost cause. I'm sure we can do better. There's lots of other states that have greater access for the general public. I know you'll hear a lot of arguments from people that make money off of their land, and boy, what a contentious issue it is. I had a neighbor that went bankrupt because he didn't have paid hunting. I think he could have made it if he had it. So I don't envy you your job here. But I just think we can do better. Other states have. Under that same issue, paid hunting, we have a pen out east of town full of big game that's not from this country. And we're trying real hard to get rid of chronic wasting disease. It's coming. It's right here in Grant County. Oh, that's Lincoln, isn't it? Or is it Adams? One or the other. It's just across the Grant County line. That guy doesn't need money from that paid hunting program. He's a fairly wealthy farmer, and I don't think he should be allowed to spread chronic wasting disease. And I think that's all I have under that subject. So
thank you.
Think hard about it and check around with other states.
Okay.
They provide a lot more opportunities like other people have spoke about.
Okay. Thank you for
thank
your
you.
Testimony. Don Dashiel.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, Director Anderson. I feel like we're getting to know each other pretty well. I've only been at this for about a year, but I've enjoyed your public meetings. Don Dashiel, Stevens County Board, County Commissioners. We've had a lot of good interaction with the Game Commission over the last year, and you know, I think it was resulted from, you know, thoughtful exchange between us, you know, for issues we have. And one of the first things that we did, you know, we were having a little trouble with in the 911 arena in Stevens County of having wildlife calls come in there and then having to transfer them to State Patrol and then maybe getting an agent contacted. We had some direct contact with the agents, but Chief Bjork came over. We had a meeting. It was mostly supposed to be about this dispatching. It got a little wolfy, of course, but we have an agreement now between the Fish and Wildlife and the 911 center, so Stevens County can directly dispatch those agents to calls that concern them. And we thank you for that. It gives us a little better way to track on, you know, what happens when in the county, things that the sheriff doesn't necessarily directly get to. A little touch on the turkeys, just because a fellow before mentioned the, I don't know if he said exploding turkey population. I think it's reached critical mass. I almost exploded two or three of them this morning on my way down, but I got slowed down in time. Last year I mentioned for Stevens County, maybe for every yard, I remember my turkey punch card. I'm still for that. And a lot of the people up there, you know, I'd say that if I was going to say thanks to somebody for that turkey population, I'd thank the farmers that provide that habitat where the turkeys roost most of the winter. And, you know, they're all for a punch card. You know, everybody likes a gobbler, but I know one lady I talked to, she said, I'll let you hunt a gobbler if you'll kill at least five others before that, so I don't know if there's an avenue for that besides that kind of a strategy. We've had good interaction with the department in our one meeting in January. We had probably 10 personnel up there, including director, assistant director, the other, you know, regional guys, and that was the first time in our commissioner chambers that there were more guns out in the audience than there were under our desk. So thanks for coming up. And I wanted to present, because one of the things we talked about there was our wolf sighting reporting tool, where we thought we maybe had a little more touch with the public. So in cooperation with the department and their IT guys, our system interfaces directly with theirs. This is just a map of our, that I'll give to the appropriate people. So we've got some database. If your goal is to count wolves and get numbers, we're getting numbers for you, and this is just a partial layer. So I will visit with you more this afternoon on other subjects, so thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I personally want to thank the Stevens County Commissioners and particularly Don for he spends a tremendous amount of time trying to help us to build a communication system, and has instructed the IT department there to work very closely with our department. And Steve Berzanga, I think, is working with Don and the staffs, and we'll hear about this in some detail on tomorrow. This is probably one of the next critical steps in terms of controlling and managing the wolf population. So it's great to see the cooperation between the county and us. They happen to be living the storm as much as anybody in the state. And they have, as county commissioners, a tremendous amount of heat on this issue as much as we do in a department. So I know it's a significant concern economically as well as just taking care of your voting constituents as well as our stakeholder constituents. So really do appreciate your efforts. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Dr. Anderson.
I just wanted to thank Commissioner DeShiel for putting that meeting together in Stevens County and hosting that. It was really a valuable experience for me to get a chance to come before that, some representation of the community there, and talk about the wolf issues and try to look for some solutions and try to create a working relationship with the community members there that we're really committed to make work. So thanks very much for doing that and for continuing your cooperation and helping us build that partnership. And did you really check to see how many guns were under the desk up front there? Or?
Well, I know how many are under the desk.
Do you really?
They belong to the commissioners.
Well, there might have been some new ones there that night.
Okay. So, yeah, thank you. I think it's good, I think, with some this reporting and some of the acknowledgement we've got from the department. You know, we had some wolf tracks around a calving lot. Steve will probably address that and try to work with some deal. But, you know, from our standpoint, we feel like we've got over 30 verified livestock kills in our county. So that's by my verification standards. We'll see where the state goes with that. And thanks, Commissioner Keeney, for being up there yesterday morning. So we do get a lot of visitors, but we are a hot spot.
Yeah, you sure are. Thank you. Thanks very much. That concludes the public input portion of the morning agenda.